This is Matt from PureNintendo.com, and you are listening to the KoopaCast, PureNintendo.com's official podcast. Before we begin, I would like to thank Big Giant Circles for allowing us to use his music for our podcast. To hear more of his work, please check out iTunes.com/BigGiantCircles, or you can go to BigGiantCircles.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the KoopaCast. This is episode 99. I'm your host, Matt, the multimedia manager at PNM and PureNintendo.com, your independent source for all things Nintendo. And tonight I'm joined by quite a crew, the largest one we've had since we switched over to the audio-only format. I am joined in no particular order by Alex Schramke.
What's going on, everybody?
Trevor Gould.
Hi, all. Thanks for listening.
Harrison Milfeld.
Bienvenidos.
James Higginbotham.
Hello, everybody.
Will Ferrell. Sorry, that was my bad SNL announcer impression. And Justin Sharp.
Hey, everyone.
And the reason we have such a large crew here is this is kind of a momentous occasion. You know, if you're listening to this on the audio, hopefully it comes out on time. It is just a few short hours. We will be seeing the Nintendo Switch event taking place at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Forgive me, I don't know all the other times after that. You know, look it up in your local time zone.
We gotta at least give the time out for our Australian listeners out there. I mean, it's quite important there.
All right, what time is it in Aussie time?
I had to look that up.
Oh, okay. Put the pressure
on. Gemma?
No follow through there.
Yeah, that was very bad on that one.
And you know, as we gear up for to watch the Switch announcement, we're sitting here pondering what we could possibly see about Nintendo's newest console. And, you know, for at least 2 years now, it's been an enigma wrapped in a riddle, wrapped in a mystery.
That's right.
And that mystery got lost in the Bermuda Triangle. But slowly but surely, you know, information has come out about the Nintendo Switch. We got a little teaser video a couple months ago. And you know, there's some rumors here and there, so we're here to discuss what we know and some of the rumors and, you know, speculate, won't see what we hope we're going to see. So, to start this out, we're going to talk about some of the things we do know, such as the launch lineup and maybe some of the tech specs. First of all, here's what games we do know that are coming out on the Switch. Cube Life, Island Survival, Lego City Undercover, Just Dance 2017, Dragon Quest X, Dragon Quest XI, Shovel Knight Treasure Trove Edition, which is this enhanced port, and it's got all the DLC, including some of the upcoming stuff, and The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And that's it. That's what we know, you know, for sure is going on to the Switch.
There is also another, there was a game that a French developer revealed like a month or so ago, Seasons of Heaven or something like that.
Seasons of Heaven.
Okay, so that is confirmed definitely.
Yeah, for coming to the Switch. So, but yeah, again, it's an indie dev and it could be, you know, not necessarily launch, but, you know, sometime in 2017.
So, yeah, there's about like, what, seven, eight games if you include Seasons of Heaven. Yep. And, you know, a few of these are pretty heavy hitters. Especially, I guess, for the East. For Japan. I know Dragon Quest is still huge over there.
Yep.
Everybody loves Just Dance. I think we've been waiting for Breath of the Wild for who knows how long. Probably, like, as soon as Skyward Sword came out, a lot of people were like, all right, when's the next one?
Yeah,
I might push a few units, you know, just a few.
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, you weren't expecting basically to, you know, just purchase your copy of Just Dance 2017 with your Switch, Matt.
I am actually. I'm going to get that box.
Hey, nothing wrong with Just Dance. I've lost quite a few pounds playing it.
Hey, that's right. That's good.
That's good.
Hey, if they have a Just Dance bundle, that's cool. They could say, hey, take the Switch to the park and just dance, you know, in the park.
Even though
somebody
not...
should do that and record like the reactions of people.
Yeah,
that would actually be hilarious.
We actually, the day after Christmas, we went up to some outlet malls, and they were playing a lot of the music from the new game. And Jen and I were debating if we should just break into dance. But we don't know, we didn't know the songs quite well enough by heart, but I almost wanted to go viral, just jump into an impromptu dance right there.
Yeah. I like.
So if that's something fans would like to see, you know, shoot us an email.
That's right.
Yep, that's Trevor at purenintendo.com.
That's right.
let's see. What I'm trying to think, I'm trying to like, I was hoping you guys were going to go on longer so I can kind of move this along.
Well,
I feel a little bit. I'm rusty. I'll admit, well, I'm a little bit rusty at this podcast.
Well,
thing.
As far as definite games on there, I mean, well, judging based on, I mean, before we get to possible rumored games on there, whatever, I think it's safe to say that we're probably getting a Mario Kart or a Splatoon remaster on there. That's from the footage that we saw from the reveal trailer. I know. It's been so long right now, and it's been basically in everybody's minds at this point where it's like, okay, it seems like it's a definite given that it's going to be, because knowing how well Splatoon did surprisingly sell well on the Wii U, and, you know, that's a great success. I'd still say that's one of the greatest success stories of, like, 2015 when it comes to gaming, just how it came out of nowhere. But I think it would be just, even though it was just like, hey, demoing this whole thing, it's like, it's a safe bet to say, like, hey, we want to have a good multiplayer experience on the Switch, so here's Splatoon.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that's a sure bet, but I would have said Skyrim Remastered is a sure bet too, considering we saw that on the screen in the teaser. But then, you know, soon after, Bethesda turned around and says, oh, we have nothing to announce at this time.
I still think it's coming. I still do. I don't think it's coming at launch, because I mentioned this to Matt earlier about how it wouldn't be really smart to have Skyrim and Breath of the Wild at launch at the same time, because those are two very vastly big open world games. And if like that sells really bad on Switch, then that scares away Bethesda and every other third party, like, oh, we can't sell it on this. But that's just my take on it. I think they wanted to quash down basically the fact, like, excitement of like, hey, you know, not coming, but we're not developing, but it's just what I'm trying to say is I think it's still out there. I really do. I believe so.
Mm-hmm. But do you think they would expect it to do well, period? Because Skyrim's already like 5 years old, 4 years old.
Well, yeah. I mean, the remastered version on there, I mean, it just...
Yeah,
I think it's good. You look at the list we have of confirmed games and even speculative games, and a lot of these are games that are on Wii U. So I would think for a Nintendo gamer who hasn't experienced a Skyrim or, you know, an NBA 2K in recent years or some of these other games, I think, you know, there's a market for that. I'm not sure how many are clamoring for enhanced games of, you know, titles that we've been playing for the past couple of years already on Wii U.
Well, hasn't even the head of Bethesda been quoted as saying it's like, we would support Nintendo when we feel like our line of games would be successful on the system. So the fact that they've, you know, are like a Nintendo partner now with it, or at least they're saying like they're on board with the Switch, that's pretty encouraging news.
Yeah, because even when they announced the Wii U and even the Wii, I don't think they had quite that level of third-party support that they showed, at least for the Switch, all those logos that they had of the different companies. But
yeah.
So I think the whole
definitely.
Not
well, the Wii took a while.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say the not confirmed thing by Bethesda is more of a wink, wink, nod, nod thing.
Yeah. It's also very interesting how small of a list that is of actual confirmed games, you know? Like, can you think of the last time there was a system of any kind, not just a Nintendo system, that is 2 months supposedly away from launching, and we know you know, 7 or 8 confirmed titles that may or may not be at launch, right? I mean, those are just confirmed to be in development, but yeah. It's just kind of crazy that, you know, this is kind of unprecedented that we're getting so close to a system launch, and you can feel the hype, you know, everyone building it up, because it's like, we don't know much at all. You know, there's the games, the potential, like, you know, there's supposed to be more surprise about the hardware. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, there's that Mario game too that they show, but that's another thing. Is that yeah. is that our launch? Is that 2 years off? That could be any time.
It's that's the thing with like with a launch like this, whatever, or well, with the event coming up, the era of launch lineups that we have for like consoles is like what we used to know. It's like, hey, a year and a half before it's released, it's unveiled. And then the next year, the other E3, this 6 months beforehand, it's fully detailed and then released. I mean, gone is that. I feel like that's going to be gone for right now. I mean, because look what I know what we saw with the PS4 Pro, for instance, whatever, that was announced like fully in September. And of course, released 2 months later. But again, it's another addition to a console lineup. We don't even know what Scorpio is going to be as far as... although I feel like that's going to be the one that's going to have the bigger technical leap as opposed to its predecessor. But with this, it's a different life cycle in terms of like how you unveil a console. It's like, yeah, you got the teaser that we had in October, then it's the waiting, and then doors are blown open about, you know, almost 2 months before this thing's going to release. So maybe, I don't know, Nintendo seems to be kind of going to the approach. It seems like almost like what Apple and all these different like other tech companies do. It's like, hey, here's unveiled, and it's... well, not to that extreme where it's like, hey, it's released today. The next day. Yeah, you don't want to pull a Saturn. Well, it's like a Saturn where it's like,
yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, where you just shut out a bunch of retailers and they're all mad. So, yeah. No, I mean it's unprecedented. I won't say not so much unprecedented, but unprecedented obviously for Nintendo.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell with the non-disclosure agreements that certain studios, developers, they'd really love to talk, and you know, for whatever reason they can't, and I guess there's a balance with that. I mean, you don't want your rivals, you know, one-upping you with different properties or whatnot, but at the same time, you know, this is really cryptic, so
even by Nintendo standards.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, and Nintendo isn't traditionally the most forthcoming with the media, but I mean, we're here, you know, filming this, and yeah, two months and change, you know, probably.
It just, it really feels like uncharted territory right now, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there really is just so many question marks, even with the teaser trailer, there's just even more question marks. Like what we know, you know, you folks at home can't see it, but a lot of the notes, we've had like meetings about the Switch, and a lot of the notes that I have here are all like marked under rumors. Like, almost nothing is confirmed, from like the text, the details about the tech specs, to the breadth of the games that we're going to get on launch. You know, it's all like question mark, question mark, question mark. And of course, like you all said, Nintendo is notorious for playing things close to the vest and revealing things, you know, when they're about to come out. But this seems like even further in that direction, which, you know, was something I had hoped that Nintendo was getting away from when they first started doing, like, Nintendo Directs. And they started having, like, journalists play the games instead of just showing trailers. Like, this seems like, you know, we're going backwards. So, I mean, that's my take just on the announcement. Obviously, this has nothing to do with, like, Switch itself, but, you know, more of, like, Nintendo's, you know, techniques and kind of reveals and stuff like that.
Yeah. They're just introducing a new format, Matt, called Nintendo Indirects. more cryptic.
Kimishima just comes out and says, "We're still making games," and that's it.
I was listening to Nintendo Voice Chat this past week, and before they were doing their Switch predictions, and
wait a minute, isn't that a plug?
I think so.
No.
Dun, dun.
Sounds like it to me.
I'll be bleeping that out.
not mine. I said chat, not chat. No, but one of the guys on IGN's Nintendo Voice Chat said about, and I like this comparison, he said, Nintendo, when you think about it, is the Radiohead of the games industry, because like they just like, hey, we got something coming out, and it just drops out of nowhere. And I was like, you know what? I'll take it. I'll take it.
I can see that.
I mean, if you want to put a positive spin on it, kudos the fact that Nintendo's built up such enthusiasm on so little info. Yeah. It shows that people are either embracing the concept behind the Switch or just rooting for Nintendo to bounce back after the Wii U. Maybe it's both. Mm-hmm. They got to capitalize on that, because that warm feelings and enthusiasm is only going to last so long. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I feel like with this event, though, there's no middle ground to it. It's either you're going to lose all that morale you got from the pause, like from over 20 million views from that, even on YouTube, that video, and all the press of people, even from casual people, you know, it's going to go either the wayside or you're going to succeed expectations. Although, I mean, I'm tempering my expectations for this one right now because of all the leaks, basically. It's just like, okay, this may be here, this may be here. But again, my only, my go-to thing when it comes to Direct is like, we're going to at least get one good surprise.
Yeah. What do you think Nintendo's going to do for E3 this year? For a plug, my predictions is one of them was that they could do a press conference, possibly. If you think about it, the whole Nintendo videos was a Mr. Iwata's idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that we have a new president, could he be changing the format of what Nintendo wants to do? Will he go back to a press conference? Mm. They didn't have one last year, but they didn't have anything to show off last year. So
I think the creativity of the digital events actually helps out a bit, because I mean, before, obviously this year we just had Zelda, but years prior, you know, you had folks, they collaborated with Seth Green from, you know, the Robot Chicken, and then next year they had Jim Henson's Muppets collaborate. I mean, given what if you say about the material that was in there, at least it was unique in some way. Would I like something as far as like a press conference like that? They could possibly return it, but also obviously what Iwata built up as far as like with the directs, it was a brand, and you know, and this was something that people, when it was first announced, people noticed and they tuned in for it, obviously. So I feel like that's one thing that actually has part of Iwata's legacy is that I kind of hope Kimishima still continues on, because you know, the fan base and people outside even games media, they like the Nintendo Directs. They like the steady, quick stream of information where it's just not, I don't know, they're scripted, obviously, but, you know, when you see a conference, it's, you can tell when there's things like, okay, this is going on way too long, you know, and such, but it's, I don't know, I just feel like a Direct is more effective in some ways, but I can understand the pros of having a press conference, especially these days, but, you know, Nintendo is doing its own thing, as I say.
Yeah, it will be interesting because... Oh, sorry, Matt, go ahead.
I was going to say that I kind of want to see Nintendo stay the course in terms of no having no press conference, simply because we have, you know, the Switch announcement. They're going to presumably show all these games. They're going to show, here's what third-party support we have, here's the first-party support. You know, here is going to maybe some of the launch titles for some of the games. We're seeing all that, you know, we're having that video experience. Now we want to follow that up with the interactive experience. We want to see Nintendo put their money where their mouth is, especially to build that consumer confidence in the latest console. And, you know, obviously the Wii U was no darling of the internet or the darling of Nintendo's console line. So in order to kind of win back a little bit more, you know, faith, I think it would be best for them to have, like, to focus on that interactive aspect of the E3 rather than just having a presser where we all sit down in a cold auditorium and listen to people talk.
Well, just to go off, how about this scenario though of being able to march Bethesda on the stage, or EA on the stage, or Square, or whoever on the stage, all these third parties on the stage, and be like, look who's back to us. You think that would be more beneficial than just selling a trailer from them?
I kind of feel like using the Nintendo Direct format, you could still accomplish the same thing. You know, we've had developers talk about their games on a Nintendo Direct, followed by showing some trailers and some gameplay, or maybe like doing a little mini interview. Like, that format has worked for Nintendo Direct. So, you know, I feel like they can keep up with that. And I feel like I'm just as convinced as I would be if they were on stage.
Didn't they have EA on stage with them though for the Wii U?
They did.
Unprecedented partnership. I would. Yeah. My fear seeing that again is that would bring me memories of of that.
Yeah. Well, that's just that's just telling you not to trust EA.
Yeah, well, no one likes EA.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think there has to be a big for a system launch. I mean, because if this is launching in March, and E3 is what, just a few months, you know, later, I think there's got to be something big, at least for this year. You know, I remember when the Wii debuted and the reports were even the Sony and Microsoft reps, the doors opened and 90% of the people ran over to Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that type of enthusiasm.
And we're kind of straying away talking about farther into the future when we should be talking about tonight or, you know, or maybe the past, because you're listening to this again because you love us that much.
That's right. And we love you too.
Just kind of going over, and we're expanding a little bit into the possible games too, which include Tokutori 2, Project Cars, Pokemon Star / Eclipse, Stardew Valley, Sonic 2017, Yooka-Laylee Constructor, NBA 2K17, Binding of Isaac, Afterbirth Plus, some game from Image and Form, Rhyme, Yooka-Laylee. Wait, I wrote that twice. I'm going to cut that out. Beyond Good and Evil 2. And then ports of Splatoon, Mario Kart 8, Smash Brothers, some kind of Mario RPG Rabbids thing that I need to talk about later, and then a Rayman Legends port. So, like, going over that list, besides Legend of Zelda, are there any, like, of those titles that kind of jump out at you? And obviously, I forgot to mention 3D Mario, but still.
Well, two being Stardew Valley. I feel like that would be pretty well in there, and being gone Beyond Good and Evil 2, because if rumor suggests that if this is going to be at the event, but in short trailer form, because word is that this could be a timed exclusive if this is true. So I don't know, given Nintendo's track record of basically helping other companies bring in other games, this wouldn't surprise me. But Stardew Valley, I mean, for something like this, we're gonna get, I want to say, not say 3DSS experiences on this, but yeah, we're going to get like smaller experiences on here, probably released in a steady stream that, you know, that do feel fit for a handheld. And I don't know, Stardew Valley seems like a good example there too. So even that.
All right. How about anybody else?
On that list, I mean, 3D Mario is a given, but for non-Nintendo, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is the only one that would really excite me enough where I want to see a list of games where it's like, this is, you know, these are games I would buy the Switch for, not necessarily one individual game, but where I can look to three or four and be like, wow, collectively, this is worth buying a system for. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is one of them. A lot of these, not so much. I mean, Sonic has been inconsistent. You know, Project Cars, some of these other ones, I just don't know. I'm sure these Wii U ports will be good too, especially if they flesh them out with like all the DLC and stuff, but yeah, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is the main one for me
personally. Well, as a Pokemon fan, I find the rumor of Pokemon Stars to be incredibly interesting. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Game Freak / the Pokemon Company, you know, they've been pretty open about, you know, we want to keep the main series, you know, handheld and portable. So, yes, the Switch does have portable capabilities, but I still view it as a home console. So the fact that there's a rumor that we could be getting Pokemon Stars for that, I find to be very interesting. If just for the case, that'll mean in the future we could get more in-depth HD Pokemon games like the 3DS handheld games on a console with more power. I would want to, you know, support Stars just for that reason alone.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Alex. I think the standout ones, Pokemon Stars or Eclipse, that would be awesome. Beyond Good and Evil 2, I played the first one a little bit, and I understand the appeal of it. But yeah, those would probably be my standouts on there. But there's another one that's not on here, Matt. You guys know From Software. I believe they're the developer behind Dark Souls.
They are. Yeah. Dark Souls and Bloodborne.
Yeah. Apparently they were on that list of partners for the Nintendo Switch when they released all those logos. And so people have been speculating that perhaps there might be like a Dark Souls trilogy or something where all three of those games could be available on the Switch. And the Dark Souls games have, you know, not really come to Nintendo consoles and doesn't seem to be kind of the Nintendo audience necessarily. But those types of games could bring in some people that, you know, like, oh, that'd be great to play on the go. You know, I'll get a Switch and, you know, pick up Dark Souls and, you know, whatever else. So I think those types of games would be important to have at launch. So those could potentially be, you know, important games if they get them.
Do you think those become more important if you throw in like Skyrim in there? Because those are just basically, those are ports. Do you think that's their way of testing the Nintendo market? If they don't do well, then we don't get more?
If that is, I think it's...
Yeah.
Oh, you do?
Oh, go ahead, Matt.
I was going to say, I don't know if I agree if that is the case. I don't know if I agree that that's a sound strategy. And I'm saying that as I look to my left over to my Wii U copy of Mass Effect 3 and Call of Duty and realize that, you know, a too little too late approach to ports is not the best way to test your audience. You know, you need something more current, which is why I'd be like more excited for like, say, NBA 2K17 to be out or 2K18 or whatever it's going to be. Because that would be a current multi-platform game that would be released on a Nintendo console. You know, that would be something that would be more, you know, maybe testing the waters.
We don't want another situation with the Wii U. We're obviously, we don't need any other situation with the Wii U, to be exact. With these third parties, you had to have a steady stream of them. But I feel like in the end game of this, we're going to get not necessarily the ports of what we may not get near good ports, probably of, you know, what the Xbox One or PS4 have. But I feel like if this thing is really truly to be easy developed for, you know, developers may just take advantage of it, and we actually get unique third-party experiences that only are on the Switch. You know, they may not be the big bombastic things that we see as for production values, but if you actually get good material out there that does sell pretty decently, then I could see a really decent home for third parties working with them. I mean, not all the time. We don't have to have every Call of Duty. Yes, that does sell to a certain. I mean, Nintendo needs to reach out to that market out there, but. Thing is, Nintendo's not going to steal away people from Sony or even Microsoft, actually. They have to gain their own audience here because the 14, 15 million people that bought Wii U, I mean, that's the hardcore audience there. That's us, basically. And but there's still room to grow from it. I mean, there's still room to actually, you know, get people out there who are obviously excited about Nintendo. And like we said with the reveal video, it's clearly there. It's just a matter of, like, here's our console, here's the price, and here's the games. You know, that's it.
All right. I'm going to keep pushing us along here real quick, but I just wanted to ask, and I said I'd get back to it later, and I didn't want to forget, one of the rumored games, and we kind of discussed a little bit about this in the pre-CoopaCast meeting, was there's a rumor of an Ubisoft-Nintendo collaboration for a crossover RPG between Mario and Raving Rabbids. And let me tell you, that does not excite me at all.
Dibs.
Okay, it's all dibs. To me, Rabbids are like the Minions before Minions. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just like these small creatures, and there's a bunch of them, and they do weird stuff, and they make noises, and they scream, and that's it. Like, that's the whole
jokes
thing.
All jokes aside, I absolutely love the Rabbids, to be honest.
No. James's last CoopaCast appearance.
it could find an audience. I just hope that it's not like a template that they use for Mario RPGs in the future. Like, hey, let's just get a third party, you know, crossover to, you know, breathe some life into the RPGs. It's like, they're fine. They're doing okay.
But like, as every, like, you know, every Mario RPG has gone on, like, people have been like craving, like, you know, we want more of like Thousand Year Door. We want more of that experience, or we want more like over the early Mario and Luigi series. And like, yeah. How does Nintendo look at that and go, we should add rabbits to this.
Yeah.
Let's add these screaming bunnies to this game.
How can you not add screaming bunnies to the
game? That's right. It's very Nintendo.
Very easily. You know,
you know what? I don't know how that game is going to be, but I'm old enough to remember when the original Mario RPG came out and the rumblings before that, you know, Mario in an RPG, mm-hmm. they're giving Square access to Mario. How is that going to work? That's so not saying this is going to turn into another,
yeah.
you know, Mario RPG. I'd be awesome if it did. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get some info, some footage, I gotta be optimistic.
No, yeah. I don't. If this game is not critically panned, I will eat not only my hat, but I will have Justin send me his hat, and I will eat that too.
You're not eating my hat that I'm wearing, no.
We're bringing back the video podcast, KoopaCast, for
just
that.
For that. You guys heard it here first.
That's a little bit more stricter than my promise that I gave a friend of mine when I said I would basically, like Hulk Hogan during his heyday, rip my shirt off if a new Metroid was announced. And I'm
nice.
I can't believe I actually possibly promised that, because I don't know if I'm going to do it.
our video is going to be a great year for video.
Yeah. That one will be rated TV-13 or.
Well, that's why Nintendo needs to bring back the press conference, so we can see Harrison stand up during the press conference and just go. Rah!
Just in mid press conference, exactly. Like Harrison yeah. rushes the stage. He goes, yeah. "I have a promise to keep."
Yeah. best press reaction ever.
There we go. Put it up on Twitch live stream.
That would be a meme for years.
Yeah.
I think I could die happy if I saw that.
Yeah. You probably die from eating those hats.
I was going to say, make sure you chew really good.
Oh, man.
Where were we? We were getting back to
that. So, yep. Raving Rabbids and Mario RPG. So, I think the consensus is we need to see it in action in order to understand it.
No,
and then we can go from there.
No.
James is like, it's gold. It's gold. Don't change it.
It's aluminum at best.
We gotta see a James versus Matt when the game comes out. Review.
I want to see all Raving Rabbids merchandise dumped into the same hole that we dumped those ET Atari cards, and then light that hole on fire.
Someone's salty.
Wow. What did the rabbits do to you, Matt? Come on, open up here.
They existed.
Yeah. Where did they hurt you?
Yeah.
And they came at the worst time.
Did the rabbits give you a cop? I say, did the rabbits give you a copy of Mario Sunshine again or something like that? That's why you're upset?
Yeah. The rabbits told me that Mario Sunshine is the best Mario game.
Oh, that sounds like they're smart to me.
I just love it. Oh, man.
Anyway, we need to keep moving here. We got to keep moving.
We're getting along. We're into the tall grass here.
Yeah. We need to move a little bit away from some of the software. We need to talk a little bit about the hardware.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, hardware is not my thing, but fortunately, we have Justin and James here, and they're a little bit better about this stuff here. So I'm going to kind of run down some of the bullet points that we have. And, you know, all these are, like, more or less rumored. Like, nobody has come out and specifically said this, except for maybe, like, the 3-hour battery life. We know NVIDIA is, you know, in it with Nintendo Switch. I think it's the Tegra X1 that's going to be in this one.
Yeah, possibly. They said it's a custom chip. It may be based on the X1. It may be based on the Pascal, what people were calling an X2, but it's not really an X2. But it's a more power efficient version of the X1. So some people are saying that, hey, maybe all of the 500 man years that NVIDIA spent with Nintendo, perhaps it's using Pascal architecture, but it's a custom X1 and not the, you know, newer chips that will probably be more expensive that NVIDIA has. So
is the newer chips called, they're the Maxwell ones, aren't they? Or is
Maxwell? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maxwell,
Maxwell or Pat, maybe I'm getting that mixed up.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think this is going to be quite the miracle machine we're going to get. And that's not a bad thing. It's just, is it easy to port with, and am I able to get games, and will this thing not explode when I'm holding it? Because obviously, if this thing was way more powerful when it comes to it, you know, that thing is going to blow up, or the battery life is going to be, I don't know, worse than a Game Gear or something like that, or a Nomad.
I just looked it up for clarification. Maxwell is the X1. Pascal okay. is the newer architecture.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when it comes to power, I saw someone on Twitter. It may have been Harrison. I read a lot of Harrison tweets.
Nice.
But someone said that Nintendo doesn't need to battle Sony or Xbox. They seem to get into the ballpark. They need to be close enough that games will be ported to them easily. Because the Wii U and the PS4 is just such a huge difference that they have to develop basically another game for the Wii U. All Nintendo has to do is just put it in that ballpark to the point of, well, it's close enough. We'll spend the extra man hours to port it over to the Switch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the biggest encouraging thing is those logos that Nintendo released of all the companies they're working with. They had a bunch of middleware companies, Unreal Engine, you know, all these companies that are designing different game engines, and they're industry standard game engines that, you know, games on PS4 and Xbox One are using. So the fact, like you're saying, they just have to get in the ballpark. They need to support those engines. Since Unreal 4 didn't really, you know, support the Wii U at all, you know, that was a big detriment because developers are lazy. Well, I mean, everyone's lazy. Humans are lazy, but
developers are lazy. Justin, yeah. 2017.
Yeah, I'm a developer, so I'm lazy. So.
I'm going to have that embroidered on the hat that I have to eat.
All right, sounds good. But yeah, like, I mean, you're going to want, like, hey, we've built this engine. It's so awesome. And you're like, oh, we have to do like a custom version of our engine to get it to run on this, you know, novelty system that, you know, our game may or may not even sell well on. If it's something that they could easily like dial the resolution down, it's like, okay, we've got it running at 1080p on PS4, 900p on Xbox One, and 720p on Wii U. But they were having trouble even getting 720p, you know, with those engines on the Wii U. So the fact that the Switch will hopefully, you know, is supporting those engines, you know, from what we've heard from some developers, Unreal Engine 4 and all that, it should be at that point where developers can say, hey, 720p in handheld mode on the Switch, 1080p in docked mode, perfect, you know, lower anti-aliasing or, you know, whatever other settings they want to do to get it to run. But at least they can push those games there and, you know, not leave the Switch in the cold. So.
And I know Unity, and Justin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Jesse said that Unreal does the same thing where developers can quickly adjust
the whole
platform to a specific version. So like it was basically just a jet box and move it down from, let's say, a PlayStation 4 game to a Switch game and just make a few adjustments here and there. It's not a totally rebuild or recoding. It's just it's already built into Unreal. And I know it's definitely built into Unity where you can just click the format of what you want the build to be in.
Exactly. Yeah, Unity is very, very developer friendly in that regard, because you can just say, I want to export this to 3DS, I want to export it to iPhone, I want to export it to whatever. You pick the format and it'll generate the build files that need to you know, upload to those various stores. So developers are looking for that type of an ecosystem where it makes it simple to develop the games, and then they can just develop it once, one code base, and then they can export it to multiple platforms. So. And it looks like Nintendo's doing that from what we've been hearing. There was even that Unreal representative or something recently. I think he was representative in Japan or something that said Unreal Engine 4, expect to see a lot of those games on the Switch. So so that's encouraging.
This does seem, I mean, no, everything is encouraging. I mean, the way you could actually describe the Switch is it almost feels like this is just a complete reboot for Nintendo after what we've seen for the last 4 years. So I don't know, it's power wise they're in an interesting situation right now. I mean, when you if they are able to put something that's so really affordable and the concept is able to grab not only a hardcore audience, well, something that's other than a hardcore audience, such as the casuals, you know, they may have something good here, whatever, with it. And I don't know. I guess I base that knowing that if this thing's a success, if it sells double what the Wii U did, it's a success if it triples what the Wii U does, Wii U did. But it's, I don't know. Anybody who hasn't even owned a Nintendo console in quite some time that I've talked to, they said like they really want this thing to succeed because they don't want to see a world where Nintendo is not a hardware maker or not an important part of this industry. Because I don't know, they feel like they're the few people out there that actually, and I feel like I'm spouting like a fanboy, even though we're on this Nintendo Center podcast, but it's just, you know, their presence in this industry is indeed important, really. I mean, they're one of the few, I wouldn't say takes risks, but they're the ones that really feel like they're the magic makers here still in the industry.
I'm curious, one negative thing, because I was into Kubikast episode 97, the last one I was on, was right after the rumors came out of what the Switch was before the Switch was announced. I think Harrison was on there, Matt was on there, and Alex, I think, was on there. We were talking about the battery life, how long we think it was. And that's the only concern I have, because if it really is only 3 or 4 hours, I think we were all under agreement that that's not long enough for us for it to be portable. And my question is, if it is 3 hours, how are they going to upgrade it? Is it going to be for us to put a new battery in there, or they can come out with a whole new Switch? Because it's not like you can come out with a new... I guess they could come out with a new upgraded Switch console.
I could see like some battery pack accessories or something, or you've seen like those cases that are kind of plug into the power port and it kind of adds some bulk. And, you know, I could see some of that stuff maybe. And then maybe an eventual upgrade, you know, where they, you know, get some extra, you know, higher milliamperage battery in there and some extra battery life somehow.
But, and there's got to be like a portable power, like a separate power extension cord that they're going to, you know, move with this thing with. Because if they expect like a 3 hour, you know, like a 3 hour gameplay session outside of the console, I don't know how they expect to do that. They didn't expect it with the gamepad, and that gamepad's relatively like a little bit more than just 3 hours.
Well, here's the thought. What could potentially save that battery is, let's say, the charging port for it. Let's say it's not a proprietary cable connector. What if it's something universal like USB?
Yeah.
What if you can charge with your own battery packs on the go? I think even something as simple as that could really help it out.
Yeah, and that's what it's rumored to be, USB-C, and you know, using some newer standards. So,
and this is where
that gives me a little bit of hope. But if they're gonna really push the portable aspect, that battery is gonna be very important.
Yeah. Actually, this was something I was just remembering, but do you remember those patent documents that were leaked in December sometime, or not leaked, but they were finally published or whatever for public use? And it showed off a bunch of the details of the Joy-Con controllers. Someone was saying that the Joy-Cons, you know, have batteries inside them, right? I mean, in order to have, you know, wireless capability with those have to have their own batteries, right? So what someone was saying was, potentially you don't just have a battery in the screen portion of the Switch, you actually have batteries inside the Joy-Cons. So the battery life may not be too bad, because you can actually slide the Joy-Cons on and it'll be able to leverage the battery life in the Joy-Cons. So potentially, let's say you're on that plane scenario, right? And you're like, hey, you know, I want to charge up my Joy-Cons. You could slide the Joy-Cons out of the screen, have the screen, you know, on its little kickstand there, slide it into that Pro Controller thing. And the Pro Controller is supposed to act like a battery pack. That center section of that Pro Controller, the modular one or whatever, is supposed to be like a battery pack. So potentially it can charge those Joy-Cons, and then you could slide it back in the Switch and you've got some extra battery life.
Oh, you're talking about the grip. Okay, the Joy-Con. When you mentioned the Pro, I was thinking, like, wait, the actual... No, you mentioned the grip, which is, like, the casing on there. You don't know. That does
the one that looks like a puppy dog when they show it.
Oh, yeah.
But, But they're saying that, yeah, that might have some ability to actually charge those because there were LED lights that seemed to indicate that there might be, you know, some extra charge in that holder. If that's the case, yeah, that would solve some of the battery. Sorry, James, go ahead.
I was going to say, well, that would solve the problem because then they need to upgrade the Joy-Cons so they can come out a year or two from now with new Joy-Cons that have a more efficient battery in there.
Yep.
You get a longer battery life instead of coming out with a whole new battery in the system or a new system itself. Just upgrade the Joy-Cons.
Yeah. Well, and then think about this. What if those inputs, you know, on the left and right where the Joy-Cons slide in can charge it? Why not have a slidable battery pack that could slide in on the left or right, and then you just use the controller? So, I mean, I think there's a lot of potential for accessories with this thing that could help lengthen the battery life. So,
well, I think it was Alex who raised the question: how much is Nintendo going to push the portability factor? Are we talking about just bringing it to a friend's house, or are we talking about playing it, you know, on the commute to work or something? Because as far as portable goes, 3DS is still going to have an active year in 2017, Nintendo says, and of course, you know, take it with a grain of salt, that the Switch isn't a 3DS replacement. If Nintendo is still going to have a dedicated portable, you know, battery concern, ultimately, how much is it going to factor?
Now,
I kind of mentioned this in my predictions. Nintendo has to make a decision on the 3DS sometime, probably within the next year. Because the 3DS, they've come out with new forms, is getting to the end of life. So if they really want the Switch to be the portable thing, why have a 3DS, in my opinion? Because then you want me to carry around the Switch and a 3DS or whatever portable you have?
But I think potentially the 3DS could be a like a kid's like, because I think the 2DS and 3DS line is kind of perfect for younger kids, honestly. And like a Switch could be that kind of higher end, you know, you don't want your cell phone games. It's kind of the gamer that wants, you know, the higher end games on the go. So potentially that could be geared towards a, you know, more expensive audience, someone that's got some money, you know, the teens, 20-somethings, 30-somethings. So the 3DS could still fit a cheaper portable area. Who knows how long they can ride that, especially with software output, because they obviously don't want to keep creating a bunch of 3DS games while also doing the Switch.
Now, because if the Switch sells 50 million copies and everyone's carrying the Switch around with them to airports, to schools, I was a developer, why would I use a 3DS platform? Why not just make a Switch game?
Yeah. The reason they're not saying it's gone is they don't want people to stop buying them. That's what they did with the Game Boy Advance, honestly. They didn't know how well the DS was going to do. And they're like, oh, yeah, this is a third pillar, right? Do you remember that third pillar talk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, do you remember what happened to the Game Boy Advance, you know, 2 years after the DS? Yeah. They did the Game Boy Micro. But it slowly just kind of fizzled out. The DS was quickly like, wow, this is awesome. Developers jumped on board, selling like hotcakes. And it's one of the best-selling systems of all time now. So,
yeah. But, of course, in that case, you're replacing dedicated portable with dedicated portable. In the case of the Switch, are they going to – is this the route they're going to go with, where we're just having this one hybrid home/portable? Because I guarantee you the same people – complaining about battery life are the same people saying, I can't fit a 3DS XL in my pocket. It's too big. These are going to be the same people saying, I'm worried about the Switch screen. There's no clamshell. There's going to be a lot of concerns about the Switch, I think, as for a dedicated portable machine. I just don't know if Nintendo's ready to sacrifice their bread and butter and jump in on this new approach.
I fully agree with that, but they're kind of forcing their hand and doing a wait and see idea of, we want this to be a portable, but we're not sure people are going to really grasp onto it and leave a 3DS behind.
Yeah. I think that's why they said it's a home console first, right? Didn't they say it's their next home console? So that kind of pivots it as the home console. And then they're kind of like, hey, wait and see. If it does well on the portable side, cool. That's a happy accident. You know, they can kind of, you know, adapt from there, even if they plan that all along.
But what is weird is that's the whole hook, though, of the Switch is the portable side.
I know. So, that, and that's what's...
Yeah, but they, like you guys said, they can't come out and say it, especially in, you know, if anybody has read up on our latest issue 31, our cover story where we cover the 3DS in 2017, they still have a few heavy hitters there. And to say that the Switch is going to come and it's going to replace the 3DS, you know, that's just going to leave those developers high and dry because nobody's going to want to buy a 3DS anymore because they're just going to put their money in the Switch and, you know. That's going to be the future.
Well, yeah, the 3DS's future all relies basically on the Switch's sales. If that becomes a success, then yeah, the 3DS will possibly be discontinued.
Yeah, but it's better to have possibly discontinued versus definitely discontinued. Definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
And the thing is, portable means different things. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, the Switch is 3DS 2.0 or whatever. Yeah. I mean, going back to the teaser, you know, and they're showing, you know, swapping at a friend's house or whatever. I mean, the GameCube could be argued was a portable because it had that handle. So
right. you could, you know, not argue that the GameCube is portable.
I could indeed. I'll write up an article.
I could,
right now.
No. I could argue that my Xbox 360 is also portable in the fact that I can fit in my backpack.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
saying
as long as Nintendo has a dedicated handheld market, would they cut that off entirely to focus solely on the Switch? Why not have, you know, we have new 3DS. Why not start churning out some new 3DS exclusives or whatever they're going to do? I think, like James was saying, I think a lot of it is they need to test the waters. As much as I could see Switch being it, I could also envision a new DS, 3DS, GBA, whatever.
Well, that's the thing, is that if the new 3DS or whatever is coming out, it's probably a year or two from now. So that should already almost be in development or almost done. Mm-hmm. So the decision they have to make should be pretty soon, within the next year or so, I would think.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think once we get our hands on the console and feel like the build quality of it, that'll probably tell us what we need to know. Because when I first saw, you know, the Switch itself, the portable unit, my first thing was thinking, if I'm taking that with me, I'm going to need an extremely good case because it looks kind of fragile. Mm. I think that will be a really big thing. Is it going to be a little clunkier? Will it be able to take some nicks and dings? Because that's something you have to consider in the portable market. If it seems like it's more fragile, then we're probably looking at, oh, we want you to be able to take your gaming to different sections of the house and not be tied down to one room.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But then that takes away the hook again of taking it out to the park or
going to the rooftop with the friends.
Exactly. I don't know. It's right. I don't know. It's what
depends to what people are expecting, I think, once they... I mean, we're basing with the bulk of this on what, a 3-minute trailer from a couple months ago.
And a bunch
exactly.
of
until we can pick up the console and feel it for ourselves, we won't get a good idea from it. And that's the frustrating part when trying to cover something like this.
Yeah.
But I agree. Was the first thing. The first thing I thought about is, you know, how all of us bring on 3DSs when we go to E3. Mm-hmm. We all really want to bring our Switches. Am I going to want the bring my Switch through the airport through security? Possibly get stolen and totally lose my home Nintendo console. I don't know. Yeah. It's one thing to lose a 3DS. Yeah, it's kind of a sad thing to do, but 3DS is easily replaced than a whole home console.
Yeah. I think of handhelds just more of, you know, your budget line. I mean, because there are more likely to be lost or have wear and tear, get scratched with your keys in your pocket or whatever. You know, I go back to what I hear and still kind of amazes me. People gripe about the XL. It's too big. I can't fit it in my pocket.
Get bigger.
I mean, look at the Switch. Look at that screen. Well, yeah, that's a good point. But look at the Switch. Look at that screen. I mean,
Yeah.
I don't want to risk junking that up.
Was that 7 inches? That's pretty big screen.
6.2, yeah, diagonal, and yeah, it's got a bezel about of a half inch. So
everything's getting tablets, mobile, everything's getting smaller, easy to carry. I just don't know if Nintendo is going to market that in the same way they would market a 3DS.
Well, that's the only, I guess, saving fact Nintendo has, that people have been carrying around tablets for 5 or 6 years now, so.
Yeah,
people are somewhat used to carrying around something like that.
Yeah. Trevor, you mentioned like things getting tinier, but things have always had the opposite effect. We have phablets, these, you know, phone tablets now. So I think it's almost the best time for a larger device like this, because people are used to carrying around a 6-inch phone or, you know.
Can you tell me, what is that phrase? Phablets?
A phablet. Have you not heard that?
No, I've not.
A phablet is a phone tablet. It's like the 6-inch, you know, the Galaxy Note,
iPhone Plus.
Yeah, the iPhone 7 Plus. Those would be phablet category, yeah. Because they are.
Yeah.
They're not quite a tablet, but they're not really
a phone. When I go to work tomorrow, I'm going to ask anybody if they know what a phablet is, and if they can describe it.
PH.
Phablet. It's on Wikipedia, so it's got to be real.
Yep.
There you go. That's your proof.
That's the biggest revelation I've had.
Again, I think. I think of it more kind of in the terms I think Alex mentioned, you know, can we take it from room to room? Like, have we experienced the frustration with our gamepad of trying to play it in the other room and losing connection?
I'm raising my hand right now. Yes.
Yeah. How cool would it be if I can take a Switch
for the Wii?
Yeah.
If I could take the Switch from my living room to my bedroom to basement, whatever. Well, if you have like little docks or whatever for each room of the house, I don't know how it's going to work, but to
be that guy, how I'm going to sell the Nintendo Switch to my non-Nintendo friends is that you can play games in the park or at work or at the airport.
Yeah.
Please don't play the Switch at work.
Yeah. Someone was mentioning like going out to their car during their lunch break and just playing in the car. So, you know,
Isn't that, I was reading some article about how one person's concern about the Switch was the fact, yeah, you have this thing that's going on, like that's going to be a hybrid console and handheld, but the fact that, I don't know, the whole article I've read something was like the fact that they enjoy handheld gaming, but the only time I actually take handheld gaming on me is when I'm traveling or when somebody occupies the TV or something like that. I don't know. It was very fascinating to me, but I felt like you might have been reading too much into it. That was just
And that's why I could see, like, if the battery life is weaker, you know, if it is 3 or 4 hours, that's a good reason for them to pitch it as a home console first. Because I think maybe 80% of the scenarios that someone would want to go away from the TV, you know, quote portable, are they're going to be in the house in just another room. You know, some kid that wants to play up in his room, you know, some guy that wants to play it in his man cave or something. Rather than, like, for me right now at my age, I'm not necessarily, I don't travel. Whenever I travel, I'm driving, right? You know, this is, you know, we don't have our parents driving us around and we can play in the back seat anymore.
Oh yeah.
So I think like 80 or 90% of the time I'm going to be playing it at home, but it's going to be in bed or, you know, something like that, where 3 or 4 hours is sufficient. And if I need to plug it in, I could just plug it in and still be in bed and, you know, it'll be interesting. But.
I'm going to cut that off, the portable discussion off right now, because we're running a little bit long. So I need to, you know, keep this train rolling. The only thing we haven't mentioned on like the hardware, at least as far as I'm concerned, is the storage. Games are getting very big these days, and even if they, you know, scale things down from like the PS4 to the Switch, you know, we're still looking at, you know, hefty experiences. If anybody has tried to download a digital copy of Xenoblade Chronicles X, they'll know that thing was like 20 gigs or something like that.
26.
26. Yeah, 26. There you go. Is that including the patches?
Yeah,
it's huge.
So, and if we're going to get games that size, you know, I need something more than like a micro SD card embedded in the stupid thing to run all my games.
Yeah, and that's like on the Wii U. That was one of the biggest games on the Wii U. Like PS4 and Xbox One, I mean, you're consistently getting games over 50 gigabytes now. So, yeah, that could be an interesting point. But now, some of that is, it's, you know, 1080p, it's high resolution textures, which they may or may not need on a Switch. So, who knows?
Right, but we're still going to see
if they do cartridge.
But what about like digital downloads now?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I can see, like, I've been pretty much digital only on the Wii U. I could almost see myself swinging all the way back to physical only with the Switch, if indeed, you know, the games are getting a lot more, you know, there's a lot more storage, and maybe you can only take a few games with you on the go with the Switch on like a card. I may just go back to physical and just carry a bunch of physical games with me. And because the game card should probably at least be able to do 64 gigs pretty easily. Those kind of SD card, you know, 64 gigs isn't that expensive. But
you know something? I just thought of this. It probably wouldn't happen, but imagine how cool it would be if they went back to like what they did with the Famicom disk system. You bought like a special Nintendo branded rewritable SD card that you could put a few digital games on. And then you're done with it, you could rewrite it and get a new one for like a cheaper fee. Yeah. And buy like a full version.
I feel like that would be confusing to a casual consumer, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really hope, because this is one thing I liked with the 3DS and the Wii U, is Nintendo really did push for, you know, digital downloads of like some of their products on there. I mean, for a while there was, I think, what was it, when Wind Waker HD, like they said like, hey, you could buy this early for a few weeks or something like that for digitally, and then it was released finally, whatever, like physical, like in a retail. But that's what's concerning about me, is like, if the rumored like on base storage of this could be 128 gigs, and the matter of like, is this, can this be expandable, is a bigger question. But if Nintendo is able to actually say, like, hey, this, we're still going forward with this whole, like, you know, if you want to have all your digital games on there, that's fine. Then I want to know what compression tools are using on these cartridges, because if that's the case, because then they are compressing these things hard.
Well, that was just going to bring that up, because I remember, Justin, you remember having that conversation when Nintendo games were compressed more than normal games, third-party games?
Yeah,
Like Mario Kart was like super small, like 8 gigs maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like 4 gigs or something.
Yeah, and so Nintendo was doing something that they weren't telling to third parties.
Mm. Yeah,
so if they can, like,
I mean, is it a case of like the point Justin made earlier? Is it a case of devs are lazy, and you know they figure if they don't have to compress, they won't do it. I'm asking. I don't know.
Yeah. Think about it. Like if you're building a game and you're building in assets, you know, image files, texture files, that sort of stuff, you may or may not optimize those. You know, you may, certain developers have come up with techniques to get higher resolution images and put them in like a, you know, in one image, and they can kind of read certain, you know, parts of that image at any given time to make it faster reading for displaying in the game. But yeah, I would chalk that up to a little bit of laziness on the developer's part. Like, hey, we've got storage to spare on this disk. You know, why try and, you know, scrunch it down to 4 gigs when, you know, we've got 16. Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's not necessarily bad having that much space in a disk scenario like that, because it's not going to slow anything down. You know, 20 gig game versus a 4 gig game isn't going to load any slower necessarily. It's just, you know, how are you actually rendering that in the game? You know, if, how are they loading those textures as you're running through an open world or a racing game? But in a handheld scenario, that's where the rubber meets the road. And, you know, maybe developers, you know, maybe Nintendo's developed some good toolkits, you know, or APIs for the developer to say, hey, you know, if you want to put it on the Switch, we've got this compression tool. You know, it takes all of your assets and, you know, shrinks them up so you can fit on the cartridges. Anyways.
Yeah, because I was thinking, I think it was when they released on the eShop the Mario U Luigi combo pack.
Mm-hmm.
And if I remember right, somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but people were complaining because that wasn't compressed. That was coming in at like over a dozen gigs, where if you were to get the games individually, I think they were like 3 gigs. And people are like, what's up with this? So it just makes me wonder, if the Switch is going to be more developer-friendly, easy to develop for, will it be that much easier for people to take their games and shrink them down?
All right. And again, I'm going to cut you off right there. We're going to wrap it up with one final thing. The only thing we haven't discussed is the price, actually.
Ooh, yeah, that's a big one.
So I'm just going to do a quick statement that it's been rumored that Nikkei has speculating, and it's not rumor, Nikkei is speculating that the price point to watch out for is 25,000 yen, which is roughly about $219. So people are thinking that we're going to see like a $250 console tomorrow or tonight. Weird continuity thing going on. So my question to you is not what is the price, but what is the price that you think it should be? Like, what's going to convince you? Like, first of all, you know, let's do this what if scenario, right? All of you game journalists, you're all fired. Nobody's a game journalist anymore. You're all just regular happy-go-lucky consumers.
I deserve it. I've been coasting.
What is it going to take for you, the happy-go-lucky consumer, to walk into a store and then walk out with a shiny new Nintendo Switch?
And that was a good question, because when you first started, I was thinking I would pay $300 for the Switch. Just thinking what it is. But then after you fired me, 50 would probably be my limit.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that extra $50 is going to go towards my utilities since you fired. I'm like, man, I gotta find some limit.
I'm eating ramen noodles here.
I would maybe do $300 if it was like a special edition, nice bundle that came with something enticing,
like Zelda or something was bundled.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was probably $250 is what I would. I'd be sitting at $2.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be at the $250 mark. I think $299. I think like if they get to like $349, I think that's like shaky ground. I think $349 is a tough sell. I mean, it was a tough sell on the Wii U, and the Switch is a lot more compelling, and I think it would still be a tough sell. So $299 with a game would be awesome. Like, my pie in the sky hope would be $199, but. Like, because to me, that's, if it was $199, that's like instant buy territory for what it is, for what the Switch is. You know, being able to play those games on the go, you know, playing on your TV, like, that's, and that's like mass market. Like, people that are on the fence, you know, about the Switch, if they see $250, they're like, oh, it's way too expensive. They see it at $199, they're like, they may still say it's too expensive, but they may pull the trigger more. I'm hoping for $249 and $299 deluxe or something.
Yeah, because they aren't selling it at a loss. That's what they've already stated.
Yeah.
For me, I would have to say $250, but I would want a pack in. Mm. I think that's when I want Splatoon remastered or Smash Brothers remastered. If you're gonna be bringing out enhanced Wii U games, put them in as a pack in. They've made, you know, they've been making their money. I think when you get up to $299, then you might have people looking at, well, I can get a PS4 with a game for $300. And, you know, how is the Switch graphically compared to that? You know, if it's on par, here's a system with a backload of games I can get.
I think you almost have to have whatever SKUs they do that they sell. I think each one of them has to actually have a game bundled. Because think about it. This is not a backwards compatible system, as far as we know, right? With the Wii U, some people could have just bought the Wii U, and you know, it. You know, granted, both of the SKUs came with Nintendo Land, but no, that's not you true, could. Actually. Oh, they didn't.
The basic model did not come with Nintendo Land. Yeah. I know firsthand.
And so, it was only 8 gigs too.
Yeah. Yep. So the basic model. I mean, but you could play all of your Wii games on there.
Yeah,
so
the Wii modes are compatible, you know.
Yeah, people could have just bought the system by itself and not needed a pack-in game. But with the Switch, it's looking like they're cutting off backwards compatibility, not just with the Wii U, but also the 3DS. So I think they have to do a pack-in at $249, which could be a Splatoon or, you know, maybe a Wii U game. That's already been released, and then maybe $299 as a new game that's, you know, Switch only, like a, well, not Switch only, but Breath of the Wild.
Or who knows, maybe we'll get a Wii Sports type situation or another Nintendo Land type situation.
Yeah, there very well could be. I'm expecting a couple surprises, if not more, of software we knew nothing about. Do you remember the AR, the augmented reality games that Nintendo did at the launch of the 3DS? I mean, there could be any number of those tiny little experiences that Nintendo has at launch, you know, that we know nothing about.
So. Yeah, I expect a pretty good amount of, well, not a good amount, like one good surprise around there. I mean, like when I said about earlier about tempering my expectations is I do fully expect we're going to get, you know, a good, you know, more better look at Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, whatever this, you know, Rayman Mario Rabbit, like Rabbids thing could be. Maybe 3D Mario, probably not, but will be launch. And then just a bunch of, hey, here's some remastered ports and maybe a couple third-party surprise. Like, you know, that's what I can get. Did everybody go around with their price? Because I feel like I was left out. I don't know.
Yeah, list your price. Yeah, I think that was the issue.
$250. Yeah. $250, I'm willing for $300, but anything above $300, it's dead on arrival.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can get a PS4 and Xbox One for, yeah, here's the thing, for less than a Wii U right now.
Exactly. And that's the crazy thing. Like, Nintendo has to price this, I think, well under $299. Like, I think $249 is a good spot, but $299 is even a tough sell.
Yeah. And I think there will only be one SKU. I really do. I don't think they will, they don't want to confuse their whole ecosystem, whatever. I mean, will we see bundles in the future? Yes. But I think for launch, it's just going to be the one SKU, and that's it for a while.
All right. I'm going to go with like $250. Yeah, $250 is going to be what it's going to be, I think. It's a good, nice round
game,
price.
No game?
No game. It's actually going to have no game. Or if it's going to have a game, it's going to be like in the system already. And it's going to be like one of those Wii Sports, Nintendo Land type deals. Something that shows off the
Switch. Yeah, to me, they can't not have a game. Or I mean, I guess someone could just buy the game separately, but yeah.
But that's going to artificially inflate your entry cost.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually do think there's going to be two SKUs, one with the game, one without the game.
Hmm. Yeah. We got a good spread then. We've got two SKUs with games, only one SKU, and then two SKUs, one without a game. I like it.
If you guys think about it, there could be a ton of games announced tonight, I guess. They're saying it could be about an hour long. They're only going to spend 10 minutes on the Switch itself. They're not going to break down the Switch in every specs during this event. They're going to show games. There's a lot of games to cover in 50 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever it's going to be.
You don't know.
That's what I'm hoping.
Kimishima is completely different. He can come out here with schematics.
he'll point out the schematics, and it's just like, as you can see here at these plans right now, a direct hit will make the Switch a complete hit.
Yeah, that's right.
A direct hit will make the Switch a success. I said hit in the same sentence twice.
And one thing, speaking of like the amount of launch titles, the amount of games we're going to see, I went back and looked at the launched lineup for the Wii U. There were 32 titles that launched for the Wii U, which I was very surprised by. Like, that's a pretty sizable launch lineup. So it'll be interesting, you know, how many the Switch has. And that obviously doesn't guarantee success. As we know, the Wii U, you know, sold 15 million, you know, and having a good launch, you know, with 32 games. Granted, some of those Nintendo Land could have been stronger and, you know, some other things, but.
Oh, yeah. Can I just say, though, I'm really worried about when it comes to pre-order right now, because wasn't Nintendo said that they were, like, the launch month, they would only be shipping, like, 2 million of these things, and I'm really scared, because
there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth in the street and, you know, all sorts of craziness.
Dogs and cats living together.
Yeah, dogs and cats, yeah.
In fact, the Koopa Cast will not air for the next couple of months after this because we will all be waiting in line.
That's right. Well, let's go. Let's do a Cartman. Let's just get out there, freeze ourselves for the next couple months.
Oh, no, there's going to be a tent out in front of Best Buy for the next 3 months.
Let's do it. I'm there, guys.
No chance.
I got a hammock. I'll be good.
But with that, I'm going to go ahead and close off this episode of the Koopa Cast. So I want to thank Alex, Trevor, James, Justin, and Harrison for joining me.
Anytime.
You know, great. You know, it's we're close to Switchmas.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Matt, for hosting.
Yeah, Matt, you did an awesome job.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to everyone next week too, which is going to be
when our minds are blown.
Someone steal my outro.
Oh, sorry. You can re-record it. Blah, 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 white space.
And take two.
And cut. There you go.
But yeah, of course, I want to thank our listeners for listening to the CooperCast. If you want to find new episodes, you can always go to iTunes and look up the CooperCast, or you can go to purenintendo.com/CooperCast. I want to thank our readers for reading our website, purenintendo.com, and also our magazine, PNN, that premieres once every 2 months. If you want to talk to us, we love interacting with our fans. We all have Twitter here, so you can always interact with us there. I am at purely_Matt. Trevor is at TrevG1. Alex is at
Trev_G1.
I said underscore.
No, you didn't.
I totally did.
You never do.
Redo.
I totally did. I said Trev_G1. I know I said it.
Rewind the footage. You did not.
Well, it's that underscore, folks. Don't forget it.
Matt, you're gonna be in more than one pair of hats.
Harrison is at H Milfield.
I got it.
Justin is at purely Justin. James is at purely James.
Sure. Well, purely_James.
Purely_James.
Yeah,
Alex, did you change yours? Is yours now purely_Alex?
Yeah, mine is the new and improved purely Alex.
Nice.
And all of us together at Pure Nintendo. So, with that, we're going to see, we'll see you next week in a post Switch revealed world.
Nice.
Bye, everyone.
See you. Yeah. Exciting times.
Good night, everybody.